Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, you join us at an auspicious time. Bitcoin, as predicted, is breaking out to new all-time highs. Obviously, that's something we've been talking about for quite a while. So I thought it was the perfect time to bring on a proper financial analyst, one that focuses very much on Bitcoin. I'm delighted to be joined by Jamie Coutts, the chief crypto analyst for Real Vision Platform. Jamie, thank you for coming on.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
We picked an auspicious moment because, you know, this morning we wake up to, well, yeah, it's your late afternoon, you're Australian. We discover that Bitcoin has sort of smashed through 111, hit all-time highs. Very positive moment at this current time. Before we get into all of that, though, I've just got to ask. You are a proper financial analyst, and you focus on crypto. So is that an easier job or is that a harder job? Because you've only got 13 years to data to look at, but then on the other hand, you've only got 13 years worth of data to draw any conclusions from. So what's it like trying to analyze this market?
Yeah, I often say we're cursed by the small sample size, right? So I look for patterns and correlations to explain how markets move. So I've got a very small data, but really what is an risk of other asset classes that hold correlations with the kind of indicators that I talk about, liquidity, various macro indicators, for longer periods of time. So you have gone equities and other asset classes and those relationships. But the thing about crypto is that you've got, whilst less years of data, crypto 24/7, 7 days a week. So in equity terms, it's really, 40% more than what we think of it. If you start, 2011 was kind of like the first time there was prices on Bitcoins. Yes. It's actually closer to more like two decades. You sort of add up all the trading, extra days, and trades on public holidays and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, you're right. It's challenging from that perspective. Mm-hmm. You have to sort of marry the analysis with some kind of first principles understanding of what drives markets and the reason why Bitcoin in particular, crypto to some degree, is going up or going down because of certain reasons. There's just very first principles thinking around, scarcity, also the failings of the current financial system, the age differential in who's buying or who's operating or who's participating in the crypto economy, and how much they're growing as a percent of the overall population to sort of draw other ways to understand, what's driving markets rather than just, correlations to liquidity.
Well, that's an interesting point. So, well, who is buying it then? Because in the early days, it was just slightly odd autistic chaps who spend a little bit too much time on the internet. But these days, I've kind of lost focus of who the main buyers are. I know the institutions are coming in now, but I don't have a sense of how big the flows of the various bits are.
I think it's safe to say just about everyone, bar central banks and, governments at this point. Although, if you look at below the federal government level, there are now states in the United, it's 23 states in the United States that have legislation that they're trying to move through their Congress or their chamber. To adopt Bitcoin in some way, shape, or form, whether it's to preserve the privacy rights, the mining rights, the sovereignty of Bitcoin for its citizens, or whether using it as a reserve asset for their state treasury. Two, I think, have now gotten to the point where they've approved it. Some have not passed, but there's basically half of the United States. But so to answer the question, it's every cycle. And there's these sort of repeat patterns of every 3 or 4 years you get this bull market. We can talk about why that is, but let's just say there's cycles within this bull market, this secular bull market for crypto and for Bitcoin. And every cycle, it just draws in more and more participants from the sectors or segments of society that weren't participating in the previous bull market. And that's because it's the super black hole of finance. It's sucking in capital from every single corner, and it is going to continue to do so until it becomes a much, much larger part of the overall capital pie.
Yeah, and you talk about the cycle there. I mean, that's probably the key factor. So is that just caused by the fact that Western governments are spending far too much and they need to juice the system every 4 years to roll over the debt? Is that more or less what's going on?
Yeah, you could probably frame it as simply as that. We live in we have a system which is a credit-based system, a fiat currency credit-backed system, fractional reserve. So there are the new money created is not backed by anything, and the new money created is really, for all intents and purposes, there to service the old debts, right? To service the interest on the old debts, because the debt that's in the system cannot be, the interest payments on the debt in the system currently can't be serviced by the growth in GDP. Yeah. So every time there's a strain on the system, i.e., it's hard to meet repayments, whether you're at the corporate level or the government level. Really, at the governmental level is where the problem is now. Before GFC, it was more at the corporation level. That's what the whole point of the bailouts and the QE was, to basically move the debts from corporates onto the sovereign balance sheets. But they have continued to grow the debt faster than the economy is growing. So, as a percentage, interest payments are now growing of the total economy. And the only way they can pay that down or resolve that issue is if we experience the productivity miracle, which is certainly a potential now with AI, right? And arguably we're about to experience it. But let's just say we put that to the side for one moment. Populations need to grow sufficiently, so the replacement level of the economy needs to increase so that there are more people producing rather than taking, and that is the inverse of what's happening right now. And the other way is that governments print more money so they basically can inflate away the debt, and that just means that everyone suffers in terms of their purchasing power, because the value of goods and services, the dollars that we are forced to use by mandate from our governments, is worth less and less.
So, let's cut to the nub of it. What is it that actually drives Bitcoin prices? And is it as simple as this liquidity cycle with a plus and minus modifier for human psychology? I mean, is that more or less it?
Yeah, there's lots of different takes on it. So my personal view is Bitcoin exists because there is a product market fit for what Bitcoin brings to the table, right? Mm-hmm. So we do not have a fair and equitable financial system. We do not have a store of value in our domestic currencies. We don't have alternatives to escape the system because everything is financialized and controlled through centralized entities. We do not have a way to engage in peer-to-peer commerce unless it is with cash, in which they're taking that away as well. My use case for Bitcoin is different to the use case in Kenya, which is different to the use case in Argentina, and it's different to the use case in for yourself there in the UK. But, if you look at it like a Venn diagram, they're all overlapping. Everyone falls in the same, within the same map, but just the requirements are different. So being that as it may, there's a need for this monetary network and the asset embedded in that network being Bitcoin. So as long as we have a financial system that continues to do the natural thing, which is debase currency, debank people, erode our purchasing power, there's a need for something else. What juices that is the level or the rate of change of debasement or liquidity, how much liquidity they're pumping in. Because when new money is created for whatever purposes to get us out of a COVID jam, right, when they shut down the economy over a man-made flu with a case fatality rate of a bad flu season, then they have to print a lot of money. Yeah. Whether it's to get the financial institutions out of a pickle in 2019 during the repo crisis, if it's to help the UK pension funds who are suffering under mounting debts because they're holding gilts that are falling in value, whatever the case may be, when that is added to the system over and above what the economy is growing at, that is excess money that flows somewhere. And I think people are working out the game here. They're putting it into the scarcest assets possible. Now, over time, that's always been gold. And in the last 20 years, because we have another secular trend outside of government debasement, and that secular trend is, you know, hyper technological adoption. So we've got technologies that are, or companies that are producing technologies that really don't need a lot of debt and are producing a lot of cash. So you've got NASDAQ outperforming most stocks, and you've got US stocks outperforming other countries. So the concentration into technology has been such. And also Bitcoin, and to a lesser degree, crypto. Bitcoin is the purest play of scarcity meets technology. Crypto is not scarcity, but it is technology, and therefore it goes up as well when liquidity goes up. And it's all being, you know, it's all just being funneled into the best performing assets because people can see the track record.
Okay, so you've got a whole bunch of things stacked up on top of each other. You've got the network adoption making the line go up and to the right. You've got the you've got the sort of liquidity effect as well, and then you've got the psychology effect, which we're not really seeing much of at the moment. And I think you've got a your base case for Bitcoin over this cycle is something like 174,000. But then because you've got those other factors at play, which is the eroding faith in the dollar system and the psychology of people when they, because at the moment the normies are not in this market at all from what I can see, the press is not talking about this, so I can imagine that's going to kick in as well. How shocked would you be if you're writing one of your reports, say a year from now, looking back on this big period of liquidity expansion, and how shocked would you be if you found yourself writing that, you know, instead of 174 it hit 200 or 250 or 300, or, you know, pick a number?
Not that surprised. I wrote a new report for Real Vision for pro subscribers, and the new modeling was just really just an update of the modeling I did 6 months ago, where I came to that sort of 179,000. Now, you know, all models are wrong. As long as they are, you know, directionally correct within a certain time frame, then they're great, right? So not [S2] Yep. [S1] Trying to pick the exact price. But the model that, you know, the refresh model and some of the new insights that I've gathered is that, you know, it's probably 180 to 230 this cycle. And that's being anchored in a fair bit of conservatism. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, there is a non-0% chance that we will see a normal one standard. If you just look at the Bitcoin chart and you do like a linear regression, just a straight line through the chart, and then you go 1, 2 standard deviations above and below, you sort of get the range for what Bitcoin can do. So it's not unusual that it goes 1 to 2 standard deviations in the, you know, the end of a climatic bull market. I'm of the view those sort of parabolic moves become softened or are tempered each cycle that we go through, because it's a bigger asset. It's easy to do that when it's $100 million, easier to do it when it's $100 billion, harder to do when it's $2-3 trillion, I should say. Nevertheless, it's shown it can do it over time, and newer and bigger, larger institutions are coming in. So to answer the question, in my model, of like, there's a percentage chance that it does 300,000-400,000 this cycle. Now, things would have to be breaking. Like, there's going to have to be massive liquidity to push it there. But, you know, we've got Japanese yields going through the roof right now. Like, the system is creaking. Like, yeah. And have you noticed that the periods between crises are getting shorter and shorter and shorter?
Yeah,
that is an expression of a complex system, or like entropy, and basically the system becoming very, very unstable. And I like to think of Bitcoin as basically it holds a mirror to our financial system. It's not volatile. The system is volatile. And over time, the inverse is going to happen. Everything's going up more. You know, if you look at Sharpe ratios, volatility levels of bonds, commodities, equities, they are going up, Bitcoin's is coming down. So everything's an inverse, and that's because the capital is shifting.
Yes, and I mean, interesting your point about how, so the 179, that is if you just draw a straight line, a straight line for regression, is
kind of like even under where it would go on a straight line basis.
Okay, because when you talk about going one or two standard deviations above, I think I'm right in saying it's never not gone to two standard deviations above, which would presumably put it at somewhere like 500.
Yeah, I don't have the chart up, but you're in the ballpark, right? Yeah.
I mean, he's a much bigger asset now, though.
Yeah. And it's also, see, everything about modeling is still psychology. Like PTSD plays a part, right? I'll anchor my targets for two reasons. I don't want to look silly.
Yes.
And also I'm scarred from the last cycle where it really didn't have the true parabolic move of the previous two cycles.
Yeah.
But I think I interpret that also, if I'm being honest, as instructive of your point. It's like, larger assets take more capital to move. It's harder to do parabolic moves, but they could happen if the circumstances arise that support it, which would be, we have a COVID moment or there's liquidity, not the COVID specifically, but some sort of need for excess liquidity to be added. Bitcoin will be the asset of choice. Gold will be as well. But for the same reasons as like you can't see parabolic moves in every Bitcoin cycle to the match the previous one, in my belief, gold struggles to get, every time it moves up 10%, you're talking about $2 trillion, which is the entire market cap of Bitcoin. So, there's some gravity to this.
There is enough capital out there to move it. So, perhaps it can. But I mean, I take your point, but the world fundamentally needs a settlement layer and a transaction layer that's outside the state system, because the state system is going to be heavily manipulated, and it already has gold, but gold is slow. So there seems to be a fundamental need for it. And I'm just wondering if, we could be underselling it, in that there could be a sort of, a suddenly all at once moment with this.
If you would like to see the full version of this premium video, please head over to lotuseaters.com and subscribe to gain full access to all of our premium content.